If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 154. Today, the Amateur Traveler has on the author of Immersion Travel USA. We'll be talking about educational, volunteer, and other immersive travel experiences today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into the interview this week, I did have two particular news stories that I wanted to point out to you. The first one is an interesting one. A hotel in Turkey on the Mediterranean coast has been having repeated problems with their male employees having affairs with foreign female guests, and so they have fired all their male employees and are going to an entirely female staff. The other top story: 40,000 British tourists were marooned around the globe by the collapse of Britain's third largest holiday operator. There was a huge airlift put on by the Civilian Aviation Authority to bring most of them home again, but some of them, for instance 400 travelers, were effectively imprisoned in a departure lounge for 24 hours and nearly rioted in Cyprus. So if you thought your holiday was bad, imagine the experience of finding out while on vacation that your operator has gone under and you're not sure how to get home. Hopefully your next holiday will be better than that. For links to both of those stories, as well as links to United Airlines increasing their fees on baggage, Air Canada dropping their fees on baggage, check out the links in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Cheryl Kane. And Cheryl is the author of a new book, Immersion Travel USA, and has come to talk to us about immersion travel and also about volunteer travel. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So first of all, can you define immersion travel for us? When you say Immersion Travel USA, you're clearly talking about domestic travel for those of us in the U.S., but what do you mean by immersion?
Well, immersion travel is something I knew I always wanted to do, but I wasn't sure what to call it at the time. And then I had met a lot of people, particularly back when I was in college, and I would hear about these immersion travel trips to Europe, where people would go and spend a semester and become immersed in the culture and the community and the food and the language. And I said, you know, that's what I want to do, but I want to do it right here in the United States. So I took that concept and I applied it right here at home to the great USA, which has so much to offer us. It's just amazing. My tagline is, don't just visit, get involved. And I have guidelines in the book where you can apply all of these different tips to almost any trip you want to make and make your travel into immersion travel.
Now, you have five major categories, or at least the book has five major categories. Can you go through what all five are first, and then we're going to delve in a little deeper?
Okay. What I really like about it is that I divided it into five easy-to-use access chapters. So the first one is helping, and helping, of course, is volunteering. And the next unit is on learning, which is learning new skills, which you can do all over the country. And then we have working, short and longer term working opportunities, because working is the greatest way to really become part of a community, because you are doing something specific that is needed in that community. And then I have caring, which is about activism with animals and wildlife. And then there's playing, which is out of the box, over the top, all kinds of fantastic things to enjoy in this country. I mean, it's just amazing what you can do. I don't know if you have ever heard about this program in Kansas where you can experience zero gravity and you can have a weekend and just find out what it's like to be an astronaut.
That's not the vomit comet, then. That's something else.
Excuse me. No way. No, it's not.
I don't know this one, then.
Ah, there are so many things in this book that you have never heard of or never found. Have you ever heard of the Chicks with Picks?
I have not heard of the Chicks with Picks.
Well, the Chicks with Picks actually are frozen waterfall climbers.
Oh, okay. All right.
And they're out of Colorado. But I don't have them in my playing chapter because actually I have them in helping, because they do fundraisers from the proceeds that people donate to their organization. They are not only having a great time and learning how to climb waterfalls, but they are also raising funds for women's issues.
Interesting.
It's really terrific. There's just so many things to choose from. In each category, there's something very different. One thing that I particularly loved is before it was fully published, I had a lot of different readers all over the country. And one elderly woman wrote to me and she said, "I'd love to read your book, but I have to tell you, I never really go anywhere." I'm like, "Okay, you sure you still want to read it?" And she's like, "Yeah, I want to read it." And I said, "Okay." So I sent it to her, and she's reading it to proof it for me and to give me some feedback. And she writes back, and she says, "I hate to tell you this, but as I was reading it, I kept making notes on these places I have to go. And I've already signed up for a program." So I'm like, "You've got to tell me what really got your interest that much." And she was like, "Well, I've always, my entire life, I wanted to learn how to quilt. And here you have this program in Brasstown, North Carolina," which I'd never heard of. I didn't even know there was a Brasstown, North Carolina. But this tiny, beautiful place, she said, "I've looked it up in books now, and I've talked to them, and I've looked at it on the internet, and I signed up for a class, and I'm going."
Excellent. Let's see. So that's the learning chapter. We've talked about the helping with the Chicks with Picks. Which of the five have we not given an example of so far?
Oh, we haven't given any examples yet of caring.
Okay.
Caring, I particularly love. There's an organization in Florida where you can be trained to observe the right whale. And they're documenting, yes, and I did not make an error there. It is called the right whale.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm familiar with the right whale.
Oh, good. I had a friend who was looking at my book, and she said, "I found a typo. You've got here the right whale." I said, "No, that's the name of it." But there is national funding for the right whales down through Georgia. And this organization in Florida has documented that the right whales are coming further south to them. And they are having their calves there. They're delivering babies. In fact, this last season, I think they had four live births there. So it's very exciting. And they have gotten the help of the whole community, and people come in. This is also a volunteer vacation where you can go into the area and have a nice vacation and also be sitting on the beach and doing a good deed. There's a hotline number that you can call, and then people will actually come out on boats to document the presence of the whales.
Interesting.
So there are all kinds of things you can do. I also love the loggerhead turtle nesting sites in Juneau Beach. That's so exciting. There's a lot of work you can do with that, too.
As you were researching the book, you clearly came across things that just surprised you.
Yes.
Amazed you.
Yes.
What would be your sort of your top three, I can't really believe that this is an opportunity? Either it's so special or it's so weird, whichever one.
I'd like to tell you a story about Caitlin. And Caitlin, Active Sports Foundation, her father was a fireman at 9/11.
Mm.
After the events of September 11th, 2001, members of the Wounded Warrior Disabled Sports Project invited World Trade Center firefighters with disabled children to attend their annual event. Mm. And their annual event is adaptive skiing out at Breckenridge Mountain in Colorado.
Wow.
So John Cerubi, who is the fireman, and his wife, and Caitlin, and their other three children, now they have another child as well, but then they had the four of them, and they all went, and Caitlin had never been on skis before, and she was 11 years old. And after that first ski spectacular, they all became so hooked on skiing, but particularly Katie, that they began going to the adaptive ski program in Windham, New York. Now, Katie was born with Abel-Ferron macrostomia syndrome, which is a rare genetic condition. And she's legally blind and legally hearing impaired. And the way Caitlin puts it is that everything about her is normal except when it comes. She says, I can do everything except I'm special needs when it comes to skiing. And thank goodness I am. Because she learned skiing because of their invitation to go out there. And she is now on the Special Olympics ski team. She just got on it. And in slalom skiing. And she's also a freshman at Harvard. So I would hear stories like this. I mean, every day. In fact, in my introduction to the book, I even write about that my favorite part of the book are the stories. And I interviewed people from all over the country. And either I ended up crying a little bit every day, or I ended up jumping out of my seat and going, wow! The woman I interviewed for rock climbing at Joshua Tree out in California. So I knew she was a rock climber, and I expected, you know, just a story about rock climbing. So she says to me, hi, I just want to let you know that I am an overweight, middle-aged chick from New Jersey. I'm like, okay. And she says, so when you think of rock climbing, think of the opposite person you think of, and that's me. And she said, our family entertainment was that we went out to dinner into a bookstore, and my mother accuses me now at 45 years old that I just started rock climbing to get back at her, drive her crazy. But she said, I love it. She said, it's so wonderful having such a wonderful activity to do outside with friends in beautiful locations that there's nothing to match it. So you just never quite know what's going to get you hooked on something new.
How did you find the stories that made it into the book? How did you find these interesting travel experiences? Or how would I, other than obviously get the book?
Yes, please, get the book. You'll love it. It'll be right up your alley. Well, I travel a lot myself, but I also ask the organizations that I found to refer me to people, to someone who had participated in the activity. But very often I found them on my own. If and when you do pick up the book, page 349, there's this wonderful story about Cindy and Greg who are going on a caravan to Alaska. And I met them when I was the writer-in-residence in the Everglades National Park this year.
Oh, okay.
I live surrounded by volunteers, actually, a lot of RVers who can just get in their RV and go. There are so many trades and volunteer positions all over this country where you can pull in with your RV and get free services in exchange for work.
Interesting.
That's pretty awesome.
Now, you and I talked a little bit before we started recording about I don't know of a lot of resources for finding volunteer travel experiences inside the U.S.
Wow.
Besides these opportunities, did you find organizations that people can plug into? Or if I don't find something, for instance, in an area that I'm going in the book, how would I find these kind of opportunities?
Well, good old Google. That's basically, I do a lot of work with that. And I also do a lot of on CoolWorks.com. They have short and long-term jobs, but they also lead you to all kinds of other connections. Some of the big ones, I mean, big obvious places to start, Earthwatch.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to earthwatch.org. I mean, they have some of the most amazing opportunities in this country where they hook up with scientists who are doing active research programs.
Okay.
And I was just interviewing someone today who had been out on the islands that stretch out from Alaska on a trip, and they were counting the seals, and they were studying the tracks, and the purpose of the trip was to help the researchers gather information about why the seal population was declining, because they had stopped the hunting of them, and yet the numbers continued to decline. And they were trying to find out why. What she learned the most there was how intricately everything depends on everything else, because the herring population had changed and this had changed. So she said there were so many parts of it, but that's a trip that you can literally buy a package. And most of the things are figured out for you, and you just get to go and volunteer different skills that you have and actually pick out what you'd like to do. There are an amazing amount of websites on the internet that give you volunteer opportunities. One is onebrick.org. They're one that will hook you up with almost anywhere in the country where you plug in the kinds of things you're interested in doing. And you can find out more. I know I, as a traveler, try to volunteer wherever I go. I was just living in Taos, New Mexico for a few months. I was a writing fellow at the Wurlitzer Foundation. And in my book, I also talk about applying for things like I do all over the country. And people say,
I notice
to me,
a theme here, okay?
Well, when I was in Taos, I wanted very much to become a part of the Taos Pueblo, which is the Native American population there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing just to go visit, but when you extend yourself, you make relationships and meet people and have an effect on people, and you take something home with you that otherwise you just couldn't have happen. So I'm also a children's book author, so I donated my books to the Taos Head Start program and went in and read my books to the group, to all the groups, actually, and performed my books as well for the kids. And then I was invited to go back and just talk to some older children. And I had a program with second and third graders, but then a seventh grade group came in.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the boys showed me a book that he had just created, a graphics art book, like a cartoon story. And it was just absolutely amazing. And I just stayed there their whole library time talking to them about what it means to be a working writer and how you go after your dreams and you can follow a passion. And you could see their eyes opening up just considering things, because just like you want to expose your own children, you want to expose children that you meet to other options and possibilities and let them know that windows are open and there are ways to go get an education and follow your passion and your love. So I'm very fortunate. Wherever I go, the first stop is almost always in the public library or in a community center or in town hall to look at a community board and just find out what's going on. I once walked into a town and there was a little sign inviting everyone in the community to a wedding. So I asked if I could go, and I went. And it was just great. It was just great. I was the breakfast lunch cook in Stehekin Valley Ranch a few years ago. So it's really great to always extend yourself, you know, and just see what you can do.
as you've done that, what's the best day you've had?
Oh, the best day I've had. The best day I've had. How much time do I have to think? I have a good day every day. I just love what I do.
I'm thinking of the day that made you want everybody else to know that this was something they should think about when they travel. If everybody could have this kind of day, it would change their life.
Wow. Well, I would say that when I lived and worked in Denali National Park, my life's goal had been to be a park ranger.
Okay.
It's still one of my life's goals. I always wanted to be a park ranger. I had no idea it's really hard to become a park ranger. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, particularly just for summer hire.
Mm-hmm.
And so one summer, in fact, 2005, I told my family and everyone, this summer I'm going to Alaska and I'm going to be a park ranger. And they're all like, okay, clear the decks, mom's leaving, you know. And then I put in all my applications like you're supposed to, but I didn't get any interviews. So I called Denali National Park. I couldn't apply for a lot of things. There are a lot of things in park ranger work that I was not qualified for.
Mm-hmm.
There were very few things. And I called the office and I asked them if she could just check out my application. She got back to me and she said, you're not being interviewed. And she said, but there are hundreds upon hundreds of vendors who need people to do all kinds of jobs because there's such a huge influx. So she sent me the file. I wouldn't even open it because I was so determined I was not going to go do sales or something. I drove myself from Connecticut to Alaska. So, I mean, this is really a big deal for me. I was finally going to Alaska. But then one night I was drinking, you know that Yogi tea? They have fortune on every tea bag.
Okay.
And I had a cup of Yogi tea. And the fortune said, when you can become more flexible, everything will fall into place. So I ran into my office, and I opened up the file, and there at the top was an oral interpreter position in Alaska. I was hired by a hotel 6 miles south of the park to research, write, and deliver daily living history vignettes on women in the gold rush. I learned how to take people on nature trails. I learned Athabascan storytelling, which is native storytelling, and did a program on conservation. Then one day, in fact, right when my job started, I had a group of two people who were park rangers in North Carolina. And they hung under my every word of my program. And they told me that I just did a great job, just like they wished all park rangers could do. I just almost started to kiss them. It just made me feel like $1 million. Like, here, I had a goal, and I found another way to achieve it. So I didn't get to go be a park ranger. But I did get to the skills that I knew I had, and I got to the best part of being a park ranger, sharing myself and what I could do and offer to other people, and then to be validated by men who worked in the field all the time was really very, very terrific. And then that same day, I took a different group on a nature trail, and a woman bent down and handed me a rock, and it was this beautiful rock with a circle all the way around it. And she's like, here, this is a wishing rock. And I said, well, I never remove anything. I really believe in leave no stone unturned and leave no trace behind. And she goes, well, I'm a botanist, and this is a very special rock, and I want you to have it to remember from me and from you, and now you can show these to people whenever you find them and teach them something new. And that day she spent an extra hour just telling me names of the plants that I hadn't learned yet and teaching me more, and just the people I met, it was just amazing. So I didn't do it exactly the way I'd planned, but I did it in a great way. So that's wonderful.
Very good. Now,
that
that's a great story. That's just what I'm looking for. I'm sure you've talked to some people who've had good experiences and some maybe not as good. Are there things that people can do differently to get the most out of this? You talked about, for instance, being flexible. What else should I bring to this?
Well, you need to bring at the beginning, at the planning stages, a lot of questions.
Okay.
If you are going in and purchasing or selecting an organized trip, you need to ask everything you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So before you even start asking your own questions, you have to ask the questions of yourself. You have to know what your tolerance level is. You have to know what kind of accommodations you need.
Okay.
You have to know what kind of food you need. You have to know if you're okay staying in a bunkhouse,
mm-hmm,
or if you need private accommodations. And then if you find a trip or something you really, really, really want to do, you need to look at all of the particulars about it and then decide if you could enjoy it better, perhaps if maybe you're a person who needs to stay in a hotel,
mm-hmm,
or maybe you are a person who can sleep on the floor. I interviewed a mother, and she and her husband and their two children went for a week to Arizona. They're in my book. They worked on a Native American reservation,
mm-hmm,
and she said it was really a magnificent trip. But luckily, in the planning stages, they were aware that they would be staying in a community center and sleeping on the floor.
Okay.
And she said she knew that she couldn't handle that. So for she and her husband, she took an air mattress, a queen-size air mattress. Her kids were fine with sleeping bags on pads. But for her, she had the air mattress, and she said, you know, it didn't matter to anyone else what she had. In fact, they thought she was pretty smart, but it worked out, and that way she was able to enjoy and get through the week. It also helps to plan a few days on your own, usually, before and after you're doing something big, like if you're going on a volunteer vacation,
mm-hmm,
because you're tapping into parts of yourself you don't ordinarily use.
Right.
Depends on what you're doing, but it tends to be a totally unique, different kind of experience than anything you're used to. So it's really important to give yourself some adjustment time on both ends.
Okay.
To ease in and ease out.
Just a couple last questions as we wind this down. Before you did the first kind of trip like this, what do you wish you'd known?
Oh, well, this all started, actually, because a few years ago, I took a trip, and I don't want to sound like a spoiled brat. I mean, I was really thankful and appreciative to get to go, but I went to Mexico, to Cancun. It was our anniversary, and it was a lovely trip, but I'm a person who, even when I was raising my children, always said, intelligent people are never bored.
Mm-hmm.
I was bored on that trip. I was bored to tears. And I was upset by it. Whenever we wanted to take a tour or anything, it was like, get on the bus. And then I didn't get to interact with the people. The people were kind of brought out, performed, and left.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is not my idea of a trip. I want to go someplace, and I want to make sure that the money I spend goes to those local people and helps them, and I'm not just supporting, you know, someone who isn't really there. It helped me decide that that wasn't what I wanted to do. A trip that helped me decide what I did want to do was I had lived in Israel and I had volunteered on a kibbutz. And that experience taught me what it was to really be a part of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I could take that to really learn and understand the United States. I mean, there's so much here. My children now want to have a family get together, and to go to a hotel or something is very expensive. But to call, there are all kinds of state parks. My kids live in New York and I live in Connecticut, and there are fantastic state parks, particularly in New York, that have rentals of cabins,
mm-hmm,
like for under $50 a night, even under $50 a weekend, some of them. And you can go, you take in your own food, everyone can hike and enjoy places, and it's just a wonderful way to enjoy everybody in the great outdoors. And that's the kind of elements that I like to incorporate in immersion travel.
Well, and I certainly understand what you're saying. If this comes out actually on schedule, which it may not, I will be in Mexico building houses, actually. So
wow.
With a group called Esperanza, which I've done. I think this will be my 12th year down. And I haven't seen Mexico outside of Tijuana, which is not people's usual experience, but the people. The reason that I keep going back, well, the food and the people, the reason that I keep going back, getting really a chance to meet people and work alongside them is just a wonderful experience.
Isn't that great? And let me close them with a story that I think you'll really love. And this is, again, in the United States. And this is another one of my wow stories. I don't know if you've heard of Bike and Build.
I have not.
I hadn't either. Bike and Build organization is for young people ages 18 to 27.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fundraiser where if you want to sign up, the idea is to bike from coast to coast.
Oh, my.
And you raise $4,000 to go towards low-income housing.
Hmm.
And then after you raise the first $1,000, they send you your bike. And then you get in training because you're going to be biking like 3,800 miles.
Hmm.
The person that I interviewed and her stories in the book and her pictures in the book, it's fantastic. She had just graduated college and she was going on for a master's doctorate program. In fact, her family had said to her, oh, why don't you go to Europe? And she said, you know, I really want to visit the United States first. I haven't been to so much of the United States. So she signed up for Bike and Build. And the very first day of her experience, she started in Norfolk, Virginia, and she biked to Oregon. And it was a group of 27 of them. And along the way, they stayed in churches and community centers, and people brought potluck dinners to them. And she said she never got so sick of pasta in her life. There was so much pasta. But she's a great, great kid. But she said the very first day, she was in Norfolk, Virginia. And here they were, everyone had their hammers and their nails, and everyone's doing all this work, and she was actually painting outside. And she said, you just heard this litany of normal, busy sound. Suddenly, a woman's laughter broke into everything. She said it was not just laughing at a joke, it was like almost hysterical laughter. It was like so loud and so robust and so big that she turned around to see what was going on. This woman was standing there with a hammer. She'd been working so hard to hammer this nail in to the siding of the house that when she accomplished it, she broke into uncontrollable laughter. And it turns out that that woman was the owner of the house.
Hmm.
She was so taken over that here she was surrounded by all these young people working with her to fix her home.
Mm-hmm.
She was beyond words. It was just so moving. Someone said that whenever people asked her what the build part of Bike and Build meant, she told them that story.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people in need and a lot of people doing wonderful things all over this country, and I hope to share all of that with you through my book.
Our guest again has been Cheryl Kane. Her book is Immersion Travel USA. And Cheryl, you have a website also. Could you give us that address?
I do. It's www.immersiontraveler.com. That's immersiontraveler.com. And it's Cheryl Kane. It's K-A-Y-N-E. I always tell people, if you spell my names right, you can always find me.
And I'll put a link to both the book and the website in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. And Cheryl, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. This is great. Absolutely great. And thank you to all your listeners. And it's a terrific show. And thank you for including me.
You're welcome. We've already mentioned quite a few websites on this show, so I'm going to skip the internet resources because of the length of this show. I would remind you that if you enjoy The Amateur Traveler, feel free to go vote for it at podcastawards.com. And then I did get a comment that I wanted to share on the Outer Banks episode from Eric. Eric says, this is a pretty nice show, but your experts seem to leave out a lot of cool details about the Outer Banks. For instance, on Roanoke Island, you'll find one of the North Carolina State Aquariums, and there's a lot of history to be seen on the island besides just the lost colony. For instance, there's the Elizabeth II, which is a replica of the type of ships used in early colonization. I was rather surprised that of all the talk of the Outer Banks stopped at Roanoke Island. The chain of barrier islands extends down to Hatteras and Ocracoke. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Not sure if the Chamber of Commerce accepts them being included in chats about the banks, but there is certainly a lot of great stuff to consider checking out along that way. And don't forget that at the south end of the island chain is some of the best scuba diving in the world in the graveyard of the Atlantic. At least it's great diving in the late summer when the water warms up. Thanks for the reminder of the great stuff to see and visit in my home state. Well, thanks, Eric, for sharing that. And with that, I think we'll draw this episode to a close. If you want, like Eric, to comment on the show, you can go to amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more.